Columbia Bike About. Discover history, art, nature, 13-mile, self-paced, well-marked trails. It's fun, it's free, and you can do it. Join us on September 15th at 9:30 a.m. for the Columbia Bike About at the downtown Columbia Lakefront. For more information, visit columbiaarchives.org or our Facebook page. Or you can call 410-715-6781. This message has been brought to you by the Columbia Association.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Dr. David Anderson, founder and senior pastor of Bridgeway Community Church. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, all I can say is, wow, what's up with Ellicott City?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the great train wreck of Ellicott City. I mean, that's certainly...
That was a train wreck.
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. You got an 80-car train, 21 cars of which went off the rails. Two people killed. Tragic. I mean, I guess that's the real story here. You know, as a father, two 19-year-old girls...
The whole life in front of them.
Certainly in the prime of their lives. You know, yeah, two Mount Hebron grads, Elizabeth Nass... And Rose Marr, I believe.
Marr, yep.
Yeah.
And Eric Nass, who's a pretty well-known member of this community, a business broker. Just tragic loss of his daughter.
You know, they just doing what kids do. Yeah. I mean, you can say, well, they shouldn't have been on the railroad track. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, but you know what? There's no evidence they were doing anything wrong. They were being kids.
Right.
Was it the right choice to be sitting there? Probably not.
I mean, of course, CSX will say they were trespassing. And you know, I mean, CSX kind of, I've dealt with the railroad a little bit in the past. They're really serious about this, about keeping kids away from the tracks, but it never works. And you can't put a big fence up around how many millions of miles of rail we have in this country. So, but, you know, of course, that's the most tragic thing. It's also been, very rough. Ellicott City's been cut off from the world, really. I mean, you realize what a critical link that is at Frederick Road, going into Baltimore County, because it's gone. Now all the traffic's being rerouted to Route 40. The businesses are hurting down there a little.
Yeah, and unfortunately we don't live in a world where people are the pedestrians they should be. So, if they can't get a parking space close down to where they're heading, they're probably not going to go. And it's really impacted the businesses down there.
Yeah, you know, what an odd spot for it to happen. I mean, if you could pick the worst spot for it actually to occur, it's there. I mean, you've got steep slope, you've got a river, you've got, the businesses, and this is weird. It's a weird kind of coincidence, but the trial, a terrorism trial in Guantanamo Bay, has had to be postponed because a fiber optic link that ran along those rail lines was disrupted.
I had not heard that.
And, I mean, of course, coincidence.
Maybe it was a conspiracy. Well,
I mean, I'm sure there's somebody in the
there's
Department
some
of...
There's conspiratorialists out there that are taking that position, I'm sure.
I'm willing to bet there's a task force within the Department of Homeland Security that's going... We don't believe in coincidences. But, what's interesting about this and what happens in any natural disaster is the community's really come out. I mean, and trying to support the families. I think about 250 kids, families, and showed up at Mount Hebron for a vigil for the two.
And they started a scholarship fund.
Yeah. So, that's so typical Howard County. We do rally around when the chips are down.
And kudos to you and to Tom Cole, HOCO Rising, and Hao Chow.
Yeah, Hao Chow.
All of whom are trying to get people to go down to Ellicott City this weekend to try to recoup some of the losses they've experienced this week from not having the traffic they would typically have here in the third week of August, which is, for a lot of them, kind of the prime summer season.
Summertime's good for the merchants. And, somebody pointed out to me, well, they have, they have business interruption insurance. If the government causes something like this, they can get compensated through their business coverage policies. But I doubt that covers tips that go to the wait staffs. And for a lot of them, that's how they live.
Look, it's insurance. And let's face it, with all due respect to my insurance friends out there, but you know what? Insurance companies are in the business of looking for ways to not pay things out. And there are always losses that are not going to be covered or going to be subject to exclusions. They're never going to recoup everything.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
And, it's rather appropriate that our guest today is a man of the cloth. because, you know, there are some people that say that Ellicott City is cursed.
That's a great shirt he's got on, too.
It's nice cloth. Is that cotton?
Got a lot of cloth on me. I'm a big guy. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, David?
Meet Dave Anderson.
We'll get to the formal introduction in a little bit.
Yeah, and the other thing that's fascinating about Ellicott City is it has such a history of natural disasters and tragedy. I mean, it's actually a very old town. And
we tried to figure 1772. There was some.
Yeah, the land was actually purchased by the Ellicott brothers, I think, in 1722, and then Ellicott City was founded in 1772. And
you've got the timeline of the disaster.
I do. You know, and the B&O Railroad laid its tracks dating back to 1830.
The first terminus of the B&O Railroad,
the old main line, right? But the back to 1868, there was a horrible flood. Floods in, 1901, 1738, 42, and then, of course, St. Agnes in 72, was it, I guess?
I don't think it was St. Agnes, it was Hurricane Agnes.
Hurricane St. Agnes. It was a saint.
Very spiritual hurricane.
It was very spiritual.
I hear her sister's going through Tampa soon.
Yeah.
All right, I stand corrected. And then fires.
Yeah, fires.
Several fires. 1915.
And let's not forget about the big manure spill last summer.
And then the manure spill last summer. So we've had a lot.
Yeah, it's been lots. So it's the poor town. But you know what? I'll give you this. Ellicott City should get, 5 stars for resilience because they pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and move on. And hopefully a lot of people will come out this weekend and show their support for the merchants. And I also, it's funny because I talk about that cutoff. I actually kind of worked my way around to the other side of the bridge.
As your counsel, I need to advise you to be careful because you did cross a police line.
I did.
Misrepresenting why you were heading in that direction.
I did.
All right. Be careful.
I did. But, does being a podcaster count as press?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I got down there, and I have to admit, when I got down there, the police were very nice. I mean, I wouldn't get in anybody's way. And I actually talked to them a little bit. And it's dead over there. I mean, at least Ellicott City, you can walk down to the stores. But on the other side, they block you. You can't get from River Road down to, down to the bridge. And that cuts off a lot of business from a lot of traffic. So they can't get even people to come down there. And they were, it was really dead. Now, the Bakery Cafe was getting a little bit of business from the massive
CSX
crews.
Workers and the cleanup crew.
And the roads are filled with equipment down there. I mean, it was really quite impressive. But this is like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of train crash, I think.
You and I talked about it this a little bit, and I found it a little bit ironic that here we are in the news is a plan to charge for parking on Main Street.
Right.
At the same time as the county executive and others are having meetings about how to spur business in Ellicott City. So they seem a little bit...
I know. But I'm behind this parking thing.
I get it.
Parking's it's an issue. And studies have shown that there's not a lack of spaces. It's a lack of people knowing where the spaces are. So part of this is to give it... I tell you, there's one feature of this new parking system they're going to put in place that I like. In Baltimore, they have the new metered stations now where you park your car and then you go find one of the boxes and you put your money in, you get a little ticket, and you go back and put it on your dashboard.
Right.
The system of Ellicott City won't have to do that. You go and you go to this little kiosk. There'll be 13 of them around the town. You put in the number of your parking space, you pay your money, and then you're done. And if you're in the restaurant and you realize, hey, I'm running out of time, you don't have to run back to the meter. You can pick up your smartphone and put more time on your parking space.
If Money Magazine knew that we were putting that kind of system into place, we would be back up to number two.
We might have been number
we'll
one.
We'll come back to that.
Anyway, lots going on in Ellicott City. The final word on Ellicott City before we move on to other stories. If you have nothing else to do tonight, this weekend, get down there. Stop in, buy a beer, say hi to the merchants, buy a flower from the flower shop. Give me a hand.
So kind of shifting from tragedy to triumph, we've got some local stars.
Yes.
We had the Iron Girl last Sunday.
Right.
Some 2,500 women from Maryland and all up and down the Mid-Atlantic and the entire country came and participated in the
Huge
Iron
economic
Girl.
Benefit to the
It's unbelievable.
We know people that were participating in it.
I sleep with one occasionally.
How'd
right
she
next
do?
To me. She did great. She finished, which
yeah,
is,
which is
you
that,
know,
right.
You know what?
Right. That's an accomplishment.
It was.
How do I feel about that?
Yeah, it's just, well
done.
And then there's that.
Well done.
And then there's that.
you know, the first few shows, she listened diligently. You know. Yeah, Paul, you're doing a great job. She don't listen to this stuff anymore. No, we're good. We're good.
Neither does Nisha. No, occasionally. But the there was actually a proposal, too. One gal crossed the finish line, and her fiancé, a gentleman stepped up on bended knee and asked her to marry him. I thought that was...
I wonder if her finishing was a contingency to him deciding to do that.
Yeah, you know? You don't finish...
I'll wait for it, but if she doesn't show up, I'm not doing this.
No ticky, no washy.
And then the other really cool thing, we've got two women from Clarksville, the McFadden sisters, who are competing in the Olympic Games.
Yeah, Paralympics.
In the Paralympics.
They're Olympians.
And, yes, they are. Really just a kind of a feel-good, cool story. Two sisters, Tatiana and her sister Hannah. Tatiana is the older of the two and has actually participated in the Olympics in Athens and in Beijing and medaled both at both of those games. And now her sister has joined her. And just a really neat story. They're both adopted and both were born with birth defects. And the mother challenged both of the girls to really engage in sports of all types and really challenge them to overcome their disabilities. And they have done that. And both of them have risen to being Olympic champions.
I love the quote.
It's really unbelievable.
So when Tatiana came here, she was very sick. And we were told that she would not have a very long life, Deborah McFadden said. She went from being weak, fragile, and anemic. And now her nickname around the world is The Beast. That's cool.
Just a cool story.
Very cool to the parents, too. Kudos to them for pushing your kids. I mean, you got to push the kids. You make your kids what they are, I believe.
You do.
I believe.
And, you know, it's funny. You think of Olympians as people, you got to be born with something to be an Olympian. You got to work hard, but you got to be born with something.
With natural talent.
These two girls have proven that's just not the case.
Oh, yeah, they were.
They set out to become champions, and they did it.
Yeah. So really kudos cool. to them. Yeah. Good luck to them, too. I don't know when they run or when they race, but good luck to them.
Go ahead.
What's Ken going to do? Well, you know what he's going to do? Ellicott City, Columbia are... Did I skip a story?
Go ahead. It's fine.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No, go ahead.
No. I did.
Go. Run with it. It's
okay,
good.
Okay. Well... Sorry about that. Ken Ullman likes to start most of his talks around here, just reinforcing the fact that Money Magazine named Columbia Ellicott City the number two place to live in the country after the icebox of Eden Prairie, Minnesota. But no longer can he say that. But now I've actually heard Ken. He's saying, well, we're in the top 10.
I have heard that.
We dropped. The new ratings came out. We went from number two to
number eight.
Yeah.
Number eight. Actually, I'm trying to find the quote, but Ken was quoted as saying, I'm proud that our strong sense of community, quality of life, and commitment to innovation and job creation continues to be nationally recognized. I mean, you know what? There really is only one place to go from the top. And it's down.
Well,
you know what? It doesn't mean we're not a great community. It just means that there are a lot of other ones that are good, and they got their turn in Money Magazine.
And people should know that this is something you apply for, and it's how you present yourself. And you know what? Maybe some people who didn't apply last time applied this time, and maybe the field got a little tougher. I don't know. But who knows? Now, what was the story I skipped? I screwed up there.
No screw up at all. The story I wanted to just mention was this woman who's on trial right now for animal cruelty.
Oh, my God. I slipped that one.
She's on trial for 69 counts of animal cruelty.
Which is horrible.
You know, I think the property manager or the community association manager kind of tipped off the police, and they found, it was unbelievable. They had dead birds and cats and guinea pigs.
No water, no food.
Nothing. I mean, it was horrible. And in the opening statement, her attorney said, it's not my client's fault. It was her husband's job to feed the animals.
She threw her husband under the bus.
And I just think it's hysterical. I mean, you know, it's how do you live with someone, claim they're your spouse, and say it was their job to feed the 69 animals that are now, half of which are now dead? It wasn't my job. I mean, this is the ultimate in the American way today of not taking responsibility for anything. Come on, people. I mean, you live in the house.
Yeah, I imagine that that marriage is probably
over
or in trouble. Let's just say it's in trouble. I like to think there's a chance. Our guest will preach. There's a chance for salvation for us all. And on that note,
Dr. David Anderson, welcome.
I'm here. How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing great.
Great to be with you.
Well,
thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
You know, took a little effort to get you here, but you know what? We succeeded, and we appreciate you being here.
We made it. By the way, we're in the top 10 Ellicott City of best places for pet lovers. Just throw that in
there. Yeah, I did. I've seen that. Yeah
even though that story about the woman throwing her husband under the bus make you want to move out of town.
But. Seriously, top 10 pet lovers.
Yeah. This is apparently our dog parks and everything else.
I'm starting to think that when Ellicott City or Howard County doesn't have a category that meets its requirements, it just makes one up.
Yeah, and that may be one of them.
Okay. I like it.
Okay.
I like it.
Why not? Why not?
So, David, Bridgeway Community Church, this is your love. It's something you started some years ago. Tell us a little bit about kind of your background and what drove you to start this phenomenal church that we have here in Howard County today.
Well, you know, in 1992, my wife Amber and I parachuted in with flares to start a non-denominational, contemporary-style performing arts multicultural church. That would cause people to be sad.
Wow. That's a lot of things.
That's a lot of things. Performing arts, multicultural.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you came, you'd see that. It's pretty amazing. But we really wanted to cause people to be sad that they had to wait a week to come back. And I think we got pretty close to it. So, you know, now we have several thousand and over 42 different nations represented. So it looks like you're walking to the United Nations. And people have often said you guys give Broadway a run for their money. But we really have a great group of people from many different backgrounds who try to take the Word of God, the Bible, and make it relevant to the day. And so, for instance, right now we're in the middle of a four-week series I'm doing called Interracial Romance. And, you know, pulling stuff like that out of the Bible is really pretty cool, especially in a community like this.
So do you have program directors that help you design these programs that you're going to run with?
We do.
Are you the genius behind all this?
No, not at all, actually. I'm the low man. I'm the low man on a totem pole when it comes to that. But what I'll do is I'll go away every summer. So I take a summer sabbatical, and then I come back with the ideas that I want to speak on. And then I will give it over to my executive director of the creative arts, who started it with me. He's full-time, and he has a team of people. And so when I tell them, you know, we're doing interracial romance, and here are the four topics we're going to do, like last Sunday, raising your kids in a religiously diverse home, then they will take that information, a short little synopsis, and they will write around it. So you have music and drama and video and things of that sort to try to get me to third base. And if I can just bunt the ball to get it home and do it all within 90 minutes, then we will have succeeded.
So you can actually create a program helping people deal with falling from number two to number eight.
Exactly.
Loss. Dealing with loss.
Yeah, it's all the way you communicate it. You're still in the top 10, baby. You're still in the top 10.
So when I come to church on Sunday, do I know what the topic's going to be? Or, so in other words, do people pick and choose when they're going to come because of what you're speaking about?
Yeah, that often happens. You know, when you go to our website, bridgewayonline.org, for instance, you'll see what the topic is right away. It's interracial romance, and there are four messages, and those message titles are there as well. So the first one was relating well, you know, and then last week we did, you know, raising kids in a religiously diverse home. Next week, you know, we'll talk about, you know, how to find a mate, you know, what are the requirements of a good mate. So, you know, all of our singles and engaged folk will be, you know, looking at that. And so, but it could be anything, not just marriage, you know, dating your wife for life or motivating the man you married, how to raise good kids. Those are contemporary, regular, everyday issues. But how does the Bible weigh in on it, and what do you do about it? You know, this coming September, I'll give a vision message, as I always do at the top of the ministry year, kind of like an academic year. Tell them what the theme is, and then kind of lay out, you know, kind of the direction we're going. So everyone gets around the theme, and we have bracelets and things of that sort. So it's kind of neat to know, okay, what are we focusing on as a church this year? And then I do everything in series. And so I'm going to do a series called Navigating Cultural Change. So we'll talk about gambling. We'll talk about gays. We'll talk about God in the 21st century.
Well, gambling's a pretty big issue for Maryland right now.
So is gays.
Yeah, right. Yeah, two hot topics.
Absolutely. And so how should you think about it? How should you act on it? What should you do? You know, can I go to the casino? Should I go to the casino? You know, all of that. That's really, people are asking those questions, and they're looking to their church and to their spiritual leaders to try to figure it out.
So do you see your role in getting the folks to ask themselves the right questions so they can help
themselves evaluate whether this is good or not for them?
Yeah.
Or do you actually take positions on some of these things?
It really depends on what we're talking about. Because I have a daily radio show in the nation's capital, I can move off some of the hottest issues onto the radio and deal with at a broader platform. Whereas with the church, sometimes people don't want you, and I don't blame them, you know, people don't want you really weighing in.
Politicizing
and weighing in on issues that are not scriptural. And so what we really try to do is use the scriptures as our platform. And then when it crosses local or regional or national or international issues, when they intersect with the Word of God, you can speak into it. If they don't intersect with the Word of God, then you have principles by which people can think about it. People can make their own decisions, but we don't necessarily take a, you know, this is what is right. You know, God has a corner on the Republican Party. Sorry, not true. God has a corner on the Democratic Party. Sorry, not true. God has his own party. And he's asking all of us to come to it. You know, and so
I knew there was going to be a line. That's the money line.
And it's the truth, right? It's the truth. I mean, God, you know, there's no political party that has a corner on God.
Sure.
But everybody tries to do that, right? Because that's what we do with God. We try to bring him into our world and then become the God of it. But if he's really God above all of us, then we got to ask ourselves the question, how do we relate to him? And where do we, how do we move and breathe within that?
Can I back up a little bit?
Sure.
Because one of the things that I was excited about having you on for, David, you truly are a Columbia, Howard County success story. I mean, you came into town, you and your wife Amber.
Mm-hmm. That's right, Amber.
Started this church.
Yep.
And nobody, you dropped it down. Nobody knew who you were. You started what, in your house?
Yeah, you know, we had groups in the home. We met in other people's homes. It was just her and I and a couple other folks who moved into town. So I would come every single day to the area where Clyde's is, right down in downtown. Uh-huh. And we were living in Silver Spring at the time, found a little group home that we could live in, and she would work full-time in the group home. We had a little corner in that home. And I would drive up every day up Route 29, and I'd spend, you know, all day just kind of meeting people, hanging out with folks.
Recruiting.
Mm-hmm. Yep, trying to figure out. Yeah, and we would literally survey people. Hey, do you go to church? No. Why not? I don't believe in God. I don't like it. If you were to go to church, what would you design it to be like? What would you want it to be like? And so we took the answers to those surveys and we created something that we believe is something that people actually want.
And that was in 1992?
Yeah, 91, 92. We got here in 91 and about 9 months later, you know, gave birth on Easter of 1992. Right. So we just celebrated our 20-year anniversary last April.
Yeah. And I don't know how many years ago, but your congregation purchased the old Head Sportswear.
Yeah, for those who know the area, there was Old Sports, Head Sports, was it called?
Head Sportswear originally.
And then after that, it was GSE, and it was kind of broken down into a couple of different companies in there.
But it's a big building. It's, 100,000 square feet?
Yeah, it's pretty large. We actually leased it. The company that was there before had some issues. So we came in, we leased it with the option to purchase it within a 3-year period of time. We had rights of first refusal, but it was a 12-year lease. So 3 years later, you know, we got in 2006. 3 years later, 2009, we did purchase it. So we exercised our option. And then we ended up taking, there's a building right before us called Smith Mechanical. And so we have a portion of that building. And now there is a building on the other side of us.
Yeah, the old Hitman.
Hitman's across the street. But on the other side, on the same street, there's a Top Flight Gymnastics.
Oh, yeah.
Then there's the laser tag for teenagers. Well, in the middle of those two, and many parents wouldn't know that area because of their kids, in the middle of those two are some about 15,000 square feet. So we've taken that down, and now we're creating, which will be open in a couple months, we're creating the Bridgeway warehouse. It's going to be a youth center. It's going to be absolutely fat. I mean, it's going to be great. And so kids will have a place where they can come hang out. We're going to put a little half-court basketball deal there. It's inside, but it's going to feel like it's outside, you know, where graffiti and pavement and chain links. It's going to be great.
So from picking people up on the sidewalk in front of Clyde's
clarify.
To,
no money exchange whatsoever.
No, but I mean, really, I mean, from cold calling.
That's right.
Cold calling on the Columbia Lakefront. To an organization that now is multi-million dollar, I would imagine, right?
True, yeah, about six million.
And employees, how many people?
I've got about 35, 40 employees.
That's really unbelievable.
That's really unbelievable.
And what's even more fascinating to me, and kudos to you, is you've done this in a period of declining church attendance. I mean, we were talking about this over. Paul and I usually get together before the show, and we talk about who you're having on and some of the topics we want to talk to.
You actually plan this stuff.
Yeah, we do. I know that comes to a surprise. Yeah. A lot of people listen. It's kind of like
it's a little bit of a strong word.
Yeah, yeah. What, plan?
Yeah, plan. Yeah. You know, and I asked Paul. I said, you know, are you a churchgoer? And Paul wasn't really raised in that kind of an environment. I was raised in.
It's really a personal issue. I would prefer not to talk about
it. Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's invite a pastor on. He'll never ask.
I was raised as an Irish Catholic, you know, which is a whole different game.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen the Catholic Church and even in my own family have a declining influence.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you've done this in face of that national trend. What do you attribute that to?
Well, yeah, first of all, of course, to God. I mean, it's by God's grace that we're still here. I mean, that's a true reality. I mean, I think that there are some
God's grace and GGP for allowing us here today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, clearly there may be some strategies to it. But the reality is, if it weren't for God's grace, I'd be screwed up, right? So I wouldn't be married, I wouldn't be leading a church, and my kids would really suck. But because God's been good to me, and because I've surrendered to Him, and a lot of other people have surrendered, I really believe it's a blessing of the Lord, and I truly believe that. Now, having said that, it takes leadership to run an organization. It takes leadership to have vision, and it takes leadership to have followers, right? And so, like somebody said, if you think you're a leader and no one's following, you're just out for a walk. So.
I like that.
Yeah. So the reality is, I mean, it does take leadership, and it takes a specific kind of leadership. You know, I did my doctorate in the sociological integration of religion and society at Oxford Graduate School, and one of the things that we learn, from Oxford is that. People don't follow you just because you're a great personality. They also need someone that has a vision, someone that has a strategy, and someone that knows how to implement it. And so we have a lot of good people like that who know how to create an organization and strengthen an organization. But at the end of the day, no matter what jazz you have on the stage, while there are certain entertaining things that will draw people, what keeps them is authenticity. You know, and when people find real community in an authentic way, they're drawn to it.
Wow. So what role do you see Bridgeway playing in this community? I mean, you talked about leadership, and I think you're absolutely right. You're a leader within your church, but I think an institution can become a leader within a community.
True.
What role do you see the church as a whole playing in Howard County?
You know, we've got a lot of work that, you know, we've been doing here locally as well as regionally, nationally, and around the world. In fact, just a couple of months ago, the gal that runs our community cupboard just won a local award here. I can't remember the name of it, but it was a pretty big award.
So community cupboard, like a food, your own food bank?
Yeah, uh-huh. It's our food bank, and it was named after a woman, and I guess it was a pretty big deal, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it. Do you know?
Audrey.
Robin.
Audrey Robin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So she just won that award.
Awesome.
And so, you know, our people were very happy about that. But that just shows, you know, I mean, feeding 800 people in our town every month, you know, and not to mention thousands of people around Christmas and Thanksgiving. And we do, you know, a buck a bag sale every year where hundreds of people come to pick up clothes. Of course, the community, our church, donates the clothes, gently used clothes. They get all cleaned and ironed and hung up like a store in our 6,000 square foot lobby. And then people from all over the community come in and they can get a bag for a buck. As many bags as they want, and they can stuff it with purses and shoes and clothes and suits, and people are carrying out 10 and 20 bags.
All right, hold on before I go too far, because this is important, because a lot of people take their clothes down to Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're telling me is people here in Howard County can bring them over to your church?
They can. There's a certain time of year they do that. I think there are other churches that do it all the time.
Okay.
For us, our deal is food, and so that's every day, any day.
I like food, too. I'm with you on that.
That's every day, any day. But we'll do a clothes drive at a particular time per year. And it depends on time of year, because every month we're doing all kind of give back stuff. So right now it's backpacks. So our folks,
sure, for back to
you
school.
Know, bought, you know, hundreds of backpacks. You fill them with all kinds of stuff, and then people get them.
So it's not only the church itself doing good things in the community, but it's your leadership inspiring your parishioners to do good things on their own in the community, like this award.
Absolutely. I mean, when you have hundreds of people feeding hundreds of people per month, that's a pretty cool thing. When you have clothing people who need clothes, that's a great thing. You partner with other organizations. organizations like Grassroots or, you know, put our people on boards, things of that sort. That's helping the community. And then the reality is, I mean, we've partnered with other organizations to take care of the homeless on Route 1. A lot of people don't know they're homeless people living in the woods on Route 1, and their kids are in our schools. And so we helped create, took the lead of 12 different churches. We took the lead, pulled them together, and helped build a facility that's internet, showers, whole nine yards. Most people don't even know where it is. These folks come out of the woods, and they can get a shower.
Hold on. You guys built a facility?
Yeah. Well, there's a facility there. We rehabbed it. It was just kind of sitting somewhere.
But you bought it?
Yeah. Well, we didn't buy it. No, we just took it over.
You took it over?
Yeah, with other partners, and created a place where these people can come out the woods and spend a day. It's a day center.
Is this the Route 1 Day Center?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that's you guys.
Yep. I mean, that's us and many others, but we were the ones that took the lead, got it going.
Right. You were the catalyst organization.
Mm-hmm. And then we moved out, you know. And so, I mean, we still support, but there's sex trafficking in town. So a lot of sex trafficking. Maryland's taking a lead on that. And so, again, we're going to do a comedy thing called Free to Laugh on Friday night, September 28th. It's $20, right? 100% of the proceeds of this comedy show will go to helping women who are being sex trafficked, you know.
There's sex trafficking in Howard County?
Yeah, believe it or not, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, not just in the county, but in the state. But
the region,
Even in this county, there's a lot of it going on. And the problem is a lot of people don't know about it, you know. So not that they just don't know about it, but they wouldn't believe when they maybe met someone that someone who is possibly working has been trafficked. And so that's the issue. And so, you've got some brilliant folk that are working around that.
You really? I would have never guessed.
Exactly.
We'll provide links and let Noah.
So, is what you've done in Howard County a model that is growing around the country, or is this really unique to us?
It was unique. You know, we have been called and considered and written about as a model. So, you know, praise the Lord for that. A lot of people read our books. A lot of people travel from different countries as well as different cities to check us out. We just had a leadership summit, the largest global leadership summit in the world, simulcast at Bridgeway, and had 80 different churches, over 500 different people from this area who came to learn leadership from Condoleezza Rice and Bill Hybels and, you know, Jim Collins, who wrote the book Good to Great, and the list goes on. And so I think we provide, you know, when you have a summit like that for leaders, not just church leaders, business leaders, community leaders, when you have that kind of cadre of leadership, and you have people driving, you know, 20 minutes to get to where we are, but we have, you know, 25% of the people that come to our church drive, 40 minutes, and then another 25% come from beyond that. I mean, you know, we did a demographic search and realized we had people coming from the Eastern Shore, from Pennsylvania, from Fairfax, Virginia, from, Philly. I mean, it was just amazing.
That's an incredible draw.
You know, so you've got this local thing, you've got this regional thing, and then you've got a sort of a broader thing, but that's for the people who are here. The model aspect of it, you know, we weren't trying to become a model, but the model aspect of it has now become something that people have studied, written about, done case studies on throughout the world. I mean, I'm pretty humbled by it. Like, one time I got an email from a guy inviting me to Africa, and I was heading there for something anyway, so I said, okay, let me give this a shot. He had read my book, Letters Across the Divide, Two Friends Explore Racism, Friendship, and Faith, which is a white man and a black pastor asking questions about race and the safety of their friendship, right? So this white guy, friend of mine, is saying, you know, why are blacks so angry? Why is everything a racial issue with blacks? Why do I have to call you African-American? Who should apologize? It wasn't me. I mean, he was just like one question after another. So these letters went back and forth. It became a book. This guy in Africa, got a pastor in Africa who oversaw 42 different churches, saw it, invited me to come. I took a risk. I went out, met with this guy, and he's like, man, all the churches are like this in America. We want to be like you guys. Actually, all the churches are not like this in America.
Just in the bubble of Columbia,
Maryland. Yeah, they're pretty segregated. Yeah. And he says, well, we want to create a multiracial church right here in Kenya. And I said, I don't know how you do that because, like, all of y'all are black. You know?
And, they missed the multi part.
Yeah. But the funny thing about it was that showed my ignorance because he was like, listen, no, you don't understand. There are over 40 different warring factions in our country, tribes, and we could really use this. And so I said, wow, okay, bring the different tribes to my room. And so they had about six different guys. We talked it through about all their stereotypes and their hatred toward one another. Believe it or not, 3 years later, this church became multi-tribal, had six different pastors from six different tribes. They were all living together. And not only the churches, right, but this whole town began to become known as a town of peace, right?
Wow.
So now check this out. And this is what blew me away. So a couple years later, which was a couple years ago, you may remember post-election violence in Kenya.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah, after the election, right. Major violence. I mean, bloodletting everywhere, right? Well, this place, Webuye, was known as the Village of Peace, right? And so people from all over were trying to make their way to Webuye. And so all these people came from all these different villages and towns and areas in the country of Kenya just to get there because their reputation was it was a village of peace. And according to them, not according to me, according to them, not one drop of blood was ever shed in Webuye.
That's
as
awesome.
A result of...
And they attribute it to that?
They attribute it to the lessons they've learned from Bridgeway, the lessons they've learned from our books, the lessons of racism that they have employed and taught all of their leaders. And then as a result of it, they became a village of peace and a leader in that area.
That's tremendous.
Isn't
wow.
That crazy?
What a story.
I mean, that's just crazy, right?
It's crazy.
All happening right here in our town, baby.
So if I'm sitting here awesome. With you 10 years from now, celebrating, having just celebrated your 30th anniversary... What's going to be new between today and then? What's on your horizon?
I'll be 10 years older. That's the only thing I know.
Day by day.
That's it. That's the only thing
I know. The good Lord willing.
Yeah, good Lord willing. I'll be 10 years older whether I'm here or not, right? I have no idea.
Okay.
I really don't.
Are you surprised that it is where it is today after 20 years?
Yeah, I am. I'm very, very surprised.
I mean, yeah, you got to look around and see.
Really?
Well, pinch yourself.
Yeah, especially, you know, I came when I was 25. And started the church, and people said, well, you're going to Columbia. I hadn't heard of Columbia until somebody said, you ought to check out to Columbia. So we drove out, checked it out.
And what was it about Columbia that made you, that was attracted to you?
A couple of things. One, I was at a church in Chicago that was very big, very large, very white. And at the same time, I was an assistant pastor at a church that was very small, very city, very black. In the projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I did not grow up in either one of the extreme environments. I grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland. I had a mom, a dad, sisters, brothers. You know, I went to public schools. We lived in a pretty, like, middle class, low middle class, whatever you want to call it. So, and everybody I knew, whether they were white, black, Asian, Hispanic, some were poor, some were rich, some were educated, some weren't, right? But when I went to Chicago, because it was so segregated, they saw a young, colloquial African-American male, and they're like, man, you're the exception. Wow. Well, out here, you're not,
you're
right?
Not
out here, it's everybody's kind of mixed like that. And so I end up going to these two segregated environments, realizing I hadn't grown up in the projects, nor had I grown up on 5-acre lots, you know, that you can start paying for at $1 million or higher. So I really wanted a place that was racially mixed, could handle, you know, an educated black man and an interracial marriage and all these other things, right? And so someone told me about Columbia. Somebody had lived in Baltimore. I was in Chicago. They told me about Columbia. I said, well, let's check it out. So we took a road trip out here, and we said, wow, this place is great.
Rocks.
Yeah, it does. This is
the second best place to live. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't know what it was then, you know, but ever since I've been here, it's been going up, right? Right. So anyway, we chose Columbia, and people would say to us, you know, well, if it's Columbia, surely it'd be easy to start an integrated church, you know, because
it's easy,
you know, yeah, that's what they would
Very
say, right?
Cool. Yeah,
because it's mixed. But check it out, you could not count the churches that had any significant integration out of 105 congregations. So check, think about this for a second. One of the most diverse places in the country,
and
the churches are still segregated.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, right.
And if it can't happen here, how else is it going to be a model to happen anywhere else? And so we thought it would be easy, and it probably, I hope, it was easier. But the reality is, even in a town like this, if you're not intentional about it, and if you don't apply the right principles, we're going to self-segregate to our preferences when it comes to religion, race, and spirituality.
No, that's true. I would agree with that.
It's where our genetic makeup drives us, unless we push otherwise.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. What's interesting is our genetic makeup is a lot alike, regardless of our race. You know, according to the latest science, less than 1% of us have any difference, right? We all come from this one man. And it's now, because of the Genome Project, clear that you and I are no different when it comes to the genetic makeup, taking us all the way back to the same parents. Duh, they call the mother Eve. I wonder where they got that. But bottom line is, if that's true, the Human Genome Project that says that less than 1% of us, there's a less than 1% difference, then what is it then that causes the division? And, I'm sure it has a lot to do with culture. So it's our culture that separates
parents.
Us. Yeah. Blame the parents, right? And the grandparents. Yeah.
Yet the cultural differences between us are probably made up entirely in that less than 1% gene.
That's the point.
So.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
We're more alike than we are different, but because of this culture thing, we're trying to get over race, and race is important, but race, color, and culture sometimes are very interconnected. Yeah. Okay.
Well, David, we're getting to the end of our tolerance for people listening to us.
Although I could sit and listen to you for hours. This is fascinating.
Yeah. I think they're tired of listening to you guys.
Yeah, that's probably true. You're accustomed to doing that. I mean,
I'm kidding.
We do appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for letting me come on. I appreciate hanging out with you guys. You got a great thing going on.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great day and have a great weekend.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Okay, and now joining us are Mike and JTAB from the Howard Community College Grand Prix Board to talk to us a little bit about the upcoming Grand Prix event. This is obviously an event that has become a well-known event in Howard County. It used to be held right at the college, and I know with the expansion of the college, they had to find different places and different venues to do it. And I guess we're actually celebrating a milestone year this year. So, gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here. We are celebrating a milestone year. It's the 25th anniversary for the event.
Wow, 25 years.
It's been amazing. We've raised $2.7 million over the 25 years, and this year we've got a goal of hitting $200,000. It's going to go right to the students. It's all scholarship money.
It's a scholarship fundraiser, huh?
It's a fundraiser for the community college. It's for the foundation board. It feeds into the foundation board, but all of the money we raise goes directly to the kids and scholarships. And
has that always been what the purpose of the event has been, was to generate scholarships for community college students?
Absolutely. It was. It's the moniker event for the foundation board for years. It's one of our key fundraisers, and celebrating the 25th anniversary is a great milestone this year.
And the event actually used to be on campus, A lot of people remember driving by the campus, seeing the raffle car parked outside, and
all the banners up and down Little Patuxent Parkway.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So a couple of years ago, I believe we moved it to Merrimah Farms in Clarksville, just because we're growing on campus. We've got more buildings coming up.
But that's a logistics kind of a challenge, isn't it? To take over somebody's farm and turn it into an event like this? I mean, how many people are going to come out there?
It's been a huge challenge, and the Doshas who have opened up their farm to us, it's absolutely amazing.
So you're talking George Dosha, Appleford.
Absolutely.
George and Marilyn have been good friends of the college.
I mean, we come in and take over the farm, and now they've got their house there. You really sometimes feel like you're imposing, but I have to tell you, when you drive up to their house and you look down at the event, it's amazing. You can't believe this place exists in Howard County. And they give us their fields, they take their horses and set them aside, and we set up in two of their pastures, we park on the pasture. So if you are coming, try to come in a car that can deal with the pastures.
We just had a pastor here. Oh, pasture.
different. So what I've always loved about this event is it's different. And, you know, the challenge, I think, for all Howard County institutions and nonprofits is to find something different to do. And this has always been an event that has been different. I obviously have attended a number of times, as has Dennis. Yeah. But for the benefit of our listeners, what is the event itself?
It's a Grand Prix jumping event. It's equestrian, Olympic caliber jumpers. If you've never seen it, you're right. It's so unique. And somebody who used to horse ride myself, going over a 1 foot jump and then watching these incredible riders, they're world class equestrians, going over 4 foot jumps right in front of you, 3-4 feet from them because you're right up next to them. It's a really interesting event. They're on a clock. They get points if they drop a rail. So it's actually kind of exciting as well.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Having watched it in the Olympics, what I think is neat too is it cuts across all age groups. You have, I mean, there was a guy 65 years old competing in the Olympics.
Oh, absolutely. We had the same range here, and what's really amazing, I think it was last year, we had a really young girl win, our junior amateur, and I mean, when I say young, she was a teenager, and you're like, wow.
Yeah. We went through past contestants and winners of the Grand Prix, and some of them have actually gone on to win at the Olympics.
No kidding. In the past. Excellent.
That's
so
tremendous.
That kind of talent is coming out of Howard County and from this event.
So if individuals or businesses want to learn a little bit more about the event, either as sponsors or buy tickets for the event, can you tell us where they can reach you or a website they can go to?
If all else fails, you can always go to the Howard Community College website and follow the links there. We also have a website for the event itself. I don't even know what it is. It's the HCCGrandPrix.com. We're also on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. Actually, we'd love you to like us on Facebook because we're always trying to get our likes up and get other people to understand the event through Facebook, which seems to be a great social.
That's an interesting line. I'd love you to like me.
Tell my wife that all the
time. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on today. We appreciate it, and we wish you lots of luck with the event.
Yeah, good luck this year.
Thank you, and I hope you guys buy a raffle ticket.
And happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scally, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on September 7th with another 40 minutes of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you'll join us.